The narrative over the past, I'll call it 5 years or so, has always been that fintechs, because they are more nimble and they're more laser focused, are going to take over the big banks. And I think you would see that actually the trend's going the other way.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter High. My guest today is Aether Williams. Aether is the Senior Executive Vice President and Head of Strategy, Digital, Innovation, and Enterprise Payments at Wells Fargo, a multinational financial services company that earns in excess of $150 billion annually. In that role, he leads corporate strategic planning, defines and manages digital platforms and capabilities, and manages innovation priorities, opportunities, and company-wide efforts to drive transformation. He also works closely with the company's technology group and business lines to deliver digital solutions and innovation to customers that are integrated, intuitive, and seamless across channels. And since August of 2021, Aether's also been on the board of Blue Shield of California as well. And now for a word from our partner, Nile, and the company's co-founder and chief executive officer, Pankaj Patel. Pankaj, talk a bit about the idea of network as a service, as this is a category you're pioneering, essentially.
Service is truly the new product. We really wanted to mold this in a way where AI truly drives the closed loop automation, because we saw this as a major hole in the way the networks were today. This is where we realized that data is the secret ingredient for what we are doing. Every facet of our life is dependent on connectivity and networking today. So we will say, before you design any piece of hardware, software, or firmware, ask yourself a question. Do you really need this? Focus on what is truly needed to deliver a service. After you have decided that you are going to need this, simplify it to the nth degree. Simplification is the key. After that, we said, let's automate everything that we are doing. Doing all of this, we were able to simplify and automate 95% of the usual things people encounter in the IT shop. You cannot do this with the product mindset. This is what we had to do in order to create the true service offering.
Thanks, Pankaj. And now on to our broadcast. Aether, welcome back to Technovation. Great to speak with you as always.
Peter, wonderful to see you. Happy New Year, or happy belated New Year.
Same to you. So I wanted to begin with the new portion of your set of responsibilities. Last year, you became the head of enterprise payments for Wells Fargo. I just listed your broader title. That's the new part of it. And yes, you lead the global treasury management team. I wonder if you could talk a bit about your expanded purview and what it entails, please.
So mid last year, we were having a conversation with the board about sort of the future of payments and sort of the importance of payments to the company. It became very clear that we have a clear focus in our consumer lending business and on sort of the card businesses. So thinking about credit card and debit card that are vital to every consumer that we serve. On the wholesale side, thinking about companies of all sizes, from sole proprietorships all the way up to the largest companies in the world, they're serviced by our treasury management business. That business had not as had much strategic focus. And so what Charlie asked me to do was really take that over and think about it about a couple of things. One is, in order to change payments at a bank, and again, payments for us generate over almost half our revenue. So being tied to connecting buyers and sellers, you need that yin and yang. So while we have a clear executive in charge of the debit and credit side, having someone really focused on the merchant or business side of that, both B2B, but also B2C payments. And so in that, I've got the treasury management business provides liquidity solutions, payments and receivable solutions to companies from $1 million in turnover all the way up to multi-trillion. We're also, though, the backbone for the payments for the bank. So you think about a consumer, whether transferring funds or initiating a wire or responding to a real-time payment request, et cetera, that all flows through the back end of the rails. And so strategically, how are we thinking about our payment platforms and how we optimize that on behalf of our clients and behalf of the company? That being federated across multiple lines of business and multiple groups didn't make a lot of sense. So that got consolidated with me under enterprise payments. So we've got sort of the view for the company. How do we best use the capabilities we've invested in and manage the risk of those platforms for the entire company?
Very interesting. And did you inherit a team associated with that? Are there new people that are migrating to the team in a fashion that befits the combination of responsibilities and the logic of that combination?
So we did have it. We had an existing business, which was inside of our commercial bank. But it was very focused on the commercial bank's clients, as you expect. And so by moving it to me more at the center, we can then expand the scope and say, how do we really provide the different set of solutions for our large corporate clients? And then also think about how we can do something more bundled, easier for the smaller clients. And as it understood, I already had digital across that whole space. And when you think about it, whether it's small companies who are using Vantage, our new platform, to cover, to sort of meet their needs and competing against, you know, other front-end software services, on the upper end, we're building out APIs. Now we're connecting to large ERP systems. And so then taking that digital channel, those digital channels, marrying it with the product capabilities, made it a lot more consistent with better speed to market. And we're just a lot more aligned in sort of the roadmap that we need to deliver. And then over time, we're starting to look at the other things that are tied to working capital management. Because as you can imagine, working capital is not only just the cash people have on their balance sheets, but it's also the lending we do to them, the borrowing they do from us. And how do we make sure those connections are really tight, whether it's secured or unsecured lending? So we're kind of over time looking at how we optimize solutions based on how the client looks at us versus how we're organized.
Very interesting. You just mentioned Vantage, the new digital banking platform.
Yes.
And I know that that is among the products associated with a deeper investment in artificial intelligence as well. Can you talk a bit about some of the use of AI in a platform like that?
So Vantage is our front-end portal. And we think about Vantage in a couple iterations. So there's Vantage, sort of the desktop version, where, you know, the client, the corporate treasurer of a middle market company or one of the people in their staff would come in and to do banking. So I basically think about payables, receivables, working capital, investing on balance sheet, off balance sheet, et cetera. And then we have a mobile version of that that we're building out for, you know, when you have to approve that wire, you know, with the airport, how do you do that sort of thing? And then also then the API gateway, which is tied into that Vantage umbrella. When we think about AI, AI for us is, it's a tool or a series of tools and technologies we can use to apply to solve client problems. The way we've applied it inside of Vantage is, first of all, to drive personalization. So I'm thinking about, Peter, here's your persona as we think about it, your role inside the company. Here's what you need to see and do. And so one, how do we, as you interact with Vantage, learn what you're actually doing and improve your experience, either by customizing your views or candidly providing you with more insights and information. So if you're the AP manager and we're noticing you're sending a lot of payments cross-border, hey, well, let's talk to you about foreign exchange. You're sending in dollars and it's being converted on the other end, you can get a better rate sending it in local currency. So let's talk about what that looks like. And then based on your volumes, your new contracts, et cetera. Also, you can start to look across the platform as we start pulling it from just payment data to your borrowing and say, hey, here's a better way to optimize your use of cash in your balance sheet, given what your rate is to borrow, what you're getting in investing. How do you think about those things? And then also, obviously, given these times, there's a whole layer of fraud protection built in. So thinking about, really, how do I know it's you? Because the number of people that happen in between phishing schemes that happen in companies increasingly at an increasing rate, or candidly, there are, you know, insider threats where people walk away from their keyboard and leave their keyboard open. But you can now use artificial intelligence and really, based on, Peter, how you type and what you look at in what order, I can know it's not you. Just like you would in a different context on consumer space on a credit card. If your credit card is being used in the West Coast, but your phone's on the East Coast, and you've never been to the city, you never bought this category, it's probably not you.
That's very interesting. I appreciate those examples. Yeah. I know, more broadly speaking, you've developed a new mobile app experience as well. And I wonder if you could talk about some of the changes you made and the rationale for those changes.
Yeah, so the mobile app experience has been an evolution, as you know, since the last time we spoke, probably over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're now up to about 30 million mobile users, and we've grown about 1.6 million mobile users over the last year. And that's been really built on a couple of things. First of all, the foundational stuff was let's get the core of the things people need to do in the mobile app there. So it's about payments. It's about balance visibility. It's about managing your relationship with us. And then candidly, starting to explore more and more products. So if I have a need, whether it's a borrowing need, or an investing need, how do we kind of link that all together, get that foundation together? But what we've done is we've sort of pivoted from just being the mobile app being a thing in and of itself to embedding digital in all of our channels. So a couple ways we've done that. So one is Fargo. So Fargo is our AI-powered digital assistant that we developed with Google. And Fargo is now in English as well as in Spanish. So when we think about Fargo, Fargo now has the ability to take you exactly to the same point in the mobile app if you have a question. Hey, I want to stop payment on this check, or I want to report a fraud claim on my credit card because this transaction doesn't look right. Not only can Fargo just take you right to where you need to do that, it also can learn and keep you up to date on that. But the beauty of things like Fargo is that now when you go into, if you called in because you had that problem and you were in the IVR, we can send you a deep link to that part of the app. So you're saying, hey, I've got to report claims. We'll text you a link that says, hey, go into the mobile app. You can do that yourself, and then you can monitor status. So it's an efficiency thing for us, but it's also a convenience thing for the customer. Let's teach them how to do things. And then we've also extended digital to our physical channels. So now when you walk into a Wells Fargo branch, and we're rolling this out nationally, we started in a couple of key high volume markets, and now we're rolling out to our entire footprint. Instead of you having a separate offline process to open a checking account or to send a wire, you can walk in and you say, hey, I want to open a checking account. Okay, download the mobile app, scan this QR code, and the banker working with you can pre-populate stuff, and within 5 to 7 minutes, you're up and running. And then you leave the branch digitally enabled. And then while you're there, we can teach you how to set up Zelle so you can make person-to-person payments. We can teach you how to go through and load your debit card or your credit card into your mobile wallet. And then we can sort of like make you digitally enabled. So you leave and you have more capabilities than you did prior to walking in. So those sort of connection points. The other thing we've built out in the mobile experience is the ability to make appointments. So if you want to go to a branch to talk to a financial advisor about a vesting need or a borrowing need, you can not only go into the mobile app and schedule that so you know the right expert is there to talk to you when you need it, but then more importantly, when you hit the geo fence of the branch, it checks you in. And so now that person knows Peter's here. And so let me go greet Peter and make a very efficient conversation and experience for you. Those are all things. So taking mobile from just being in the app and extending it to all the touch points where our clients want to interact with us, because there's certain things where they want to do in the app. Other things that empathy and understanding you get from a human being can't be replaced and shouldn't be. So how do we digitally enable that experience so they know who's there and what they're doing?
And it brings to mind something you and I've talked about in the past as well, your digital first personalized financial advice and planning offerings as well, the expansion of that to a broader swath of your customers as well. It seems like there's a lot of alignment there.
As you know, our advice and planning tool is called LifeSync. We started that just with our financial advisors. And look, we wanted to create, candidly, a digital link between people who had a financial advisor and sort of their goals. Because oftentimes you get your financial advisor, you set up a plan. Here's my financial plan and my objectives. And then that goes in the desk drawer and you go about your day to day. And then once or twice a year, you're connecting. But every day or every, you know, pretty often in people's lives, they're making goals and changes. Oh, I want to save for this trip. Our child's going to go to college or more, you know, interim stuff like you have a wedding coming up or other life events that sort of change, and you have these long-term, medium-term, and short-term financial goals. Well, LifeSync allows you to kind of log those goals in and then started with connecting it to just your financial advisor so you were real-time aware, oh, Peter updated his goals. Peter now wants to retire 2 years earlier, so let's think about your investment strategy or your savings strategy. So that's kind of one side of it. We rolled it out now to our entire 40-plus million consumers with the goal of saying, hey, regardless of where you are in your financial evolution or how much money you have goals, whether it's just like budgeting or it's, you know, saving for retirement or what have you. We've also now started to connect that with things like Fargo. So now if you say, I have a goal, I want to save for this trip, we can actually have Fargo monitor your spending and say, hey, Peter, you want to cut back on the Starbucks? or here's a different way to use your funds. Cause we noticed you're revolving on your credit card and you have the cash. Given the difference in the interest rate you're getting on one and paying on the other, maybe you should pay some of that debt down. So there's things we can do with you like that to help you sort of, as we get to know you more and see more of your relationship, leverage things like Fargo to be helpful to you to achieve your financial goals. So we need to know that about you. Ultimately, I want to push that actually over to the small business segment, which is a place I think we have a lot of demand, where you've got small business owners who are, you know, where your personal wealth is tied up in your business. And so how can we help you manage your business effectively that has the same connection to your financial wealth, but the two are intertwined? And we can use tools like machine learning and eventually generative AI to add capabilities to Fargo to help you manage your personal relationship.
That's really interesting. Fascinating to hear more about the evolution of the offering that you shared with me a couple years back as well. I appreciate you sharing that. Aether, you also recently shared with me, I know you do sort of annual predictions that you contemplate with your team. And you were kind enough to share your 2024 predictions. I wanted to run through a few of those and have you provide a bit further context as to why you developed these hypotheses. The first was, the uncertainty in the macroeconomic environment will tilt the balance of power away from fintech's unbundling trend and back to the big banks. Why is that the case?
Yeah, so I think the narrative over the past, you know, about 5 years or so has always been that fintechs, because they are more nimble, and they're more laser focused, are going to take over the big banks. And I think you would see that actually the trend's going the other way, that some of the uncertainty we had in some of the mid-tier banks last year highlighted a counterparty risk that was the same similar counterparty risk we saw in 08, 09. And so that's kind of one set of data points. The other set is saying that when you look at the models most fintechs have, they have sort of like one sort of like revenue model. It's like, we're going to arbitrage non-regulated Durbin interchange for interest rates. Well, that worked fine when interest rates were at zero and banks were paying nothing and Durbin interchange is where it is. Now interest rates are at, you know, 5.25%. That model falls apart. There's all this challenge to make difference because the economics change. And in a bank like ours, we have the ability, because of our diversified portfolio of capabilities as well as revenue streams, to manage that through the cycle. And so we can definitely hang in there. Also, I think we got a wake-up call from the fintechs. So where 3-4 years ago, we were thinking very product-related around our digital capabilities, places like Wells Fargo formed my team, and now we're laser-focused on customer experience. Now our mobile capabilities are best in class. So we can compete with you in terms of experience, and we have the breadth of capabilities to service you. And as a counterparty, we're just much more reliable. And the other part of that is we can invest through the cycle. And you know, we still have, you know, a multi-billion dollar investment plan that goes year after year. Whereas, you know, raising venture capital money in this market is very difficult. And so, you know, we don't have those sort of fits and starts. So I think that gives us a competitive advantage.
That's so interesting. And as it turns out, scale, history, understanding of the regulatory environment, a great customer base, and as you point out, an ability to pivot, be nimble enough to get the wake-up call and do something about it. All very powerful. Appreciate you sharing that one. The second of the trends I wanted to discuss with you, digital transformation continues to accelerate in banking, while the adoption of generative AI may lag behind. Why do you think that might be the case?
Generative AI is not the first new technology to hit any of us in our working lives, right? And there's a lot of interest, a lot of potential in generative AI, but it's still very early. And, you know, when you're using ChatGPT to see during your high school paper, it's one thing. When you use it to make a recommendation to someone about a risk issue, it's a completely different thing in terms of, you know, the tolerance for accuracy, hallucinations, all those sort of things. So I think that it's like we have to kind of go down this journey and understand. That's sort of one thing. The thing to realize is that banks like ourselves have been using forms of artificial intelligence for a decade. So, you know, we've been using machine learning models to do fraud mitigation, credit card authorizations, all those sort of things for a long period of time. So Gen AI is the next capability we need to look at. And I think that when we look at the benefits to the bank, generative AI has a lot of potential. It's still very early. We still need to also figure out the difference. And there's a lot of also things going on in the market around the legal constructs around who owns the model given the data used to train it. You know, so part of the narrative right now is OpenAI is being challenged by various media outlets because they used proprietary data to train their large language models. And so there's a lot of question people like us, well, okay, well then what happens when we feed our proprietary data into that model? Even if it's in our own private cloud context, what does that mean for the ownership of the data, et cetera? So there's a lot of things that have to be settled out before we can really move forward at scale. However, that doesn't prevent us from going ahead and running internal pilots, because we have things like we have Fargo out there just using large language models. We're also running a bunch of use cases internally about saying, hey, how can you improve customer service? How can you improve, you know, run things that are like co-pilots to summarize reports and documents and meetings and things like that? You can definitely do that, or generate the first version of content that a human in the loop can then go edit. So we're starting to play with this. We need to learn, but I think we need to crawl for a while on this one before we get up on 2 feet and before we start running. Whereas I think we can deploy other forms of artificial intelligence much more aggressively.
Very interesting, Aether. Good of you to be more intentional in your thinking regarding generative AI. Clearly you see the opportunities and are taking advantage of them, but you're right to be cautious as well. The third trend you highlighted is that payment speed kills. You underscore how accelerated payment systems are amplifying fraud and scam vulnerabilities. Why is that the case?
Yeah, well, so there's a couple pieces around payments, and the speed is definitely kind of the key thing. So with the last couple of years, the increasing adoption of real-time payments. And so, I mean, real-time payments are thinking about, ACH is running a batch. A real-time payment is something that clears and settles with finality in seconds. And the clearinghouse has a version. The Fed launched FedNow earlier this year in the U.S. There are versions of this all over in 20-plus markets around the world. And it's definitely viewed as the next frontier. The challenge is that when you compare that to what something is relatively real time, like a card network, there's a couple of differences. Card networks have very well established, like them or not, rules and economics to cover things like fraud, returns, et cetera. Real time payment rails don't have any of that. So like P2P, when you send money to your friend to split the check on using Zelle, for example, it's free. So now if you want to start doing that at the point of sale and there's an issue, there's no economics to unwind that and sort of take the fraud and like you would call up in your credit card, they pulled off your statement until it's settled. The economics don't exist to do that. The other challenge is that the fraudsters are learning, and the fraudsters are saying, oh, well, if this is final and it's happening right now, the social engineering has gotten pretty intense using sometimes artificial intelligence. So they're going after people, oftentimes, unfortunately, vulnerable populations. Older people or people who are less educated, and they're saying, hey, let's trick you into making a payment using one of these payment mechanisms that settle in real time, and then you can't get things back. And so the real challenge is that, all the fraud tools and things around most payment rails, that's cards different, were built by our batch. So now I've got money moving in real time, fraud monitoring not happening in the same real-time basis on an individual transaction level. Now you have a mismatch. And so being able to protect you around real-time payments is difficult in how most banks are structured. Now we're all investing a lot of money and some key resources in improving that and understanding the use cases that matter. And also doing a lot on customer education to let people know that if I was going to hand you cash, there's a certain amount of trust factor that I have. That I know you and I know what I'm getting. Service or goods is what I'm paying for. It shouldn't be any different when you're doing a real-time payment. So if you're using a digital payment mechanism, you should be comfortable who you're paying and what you're not. So inducing a little friction into that system. If you notice you want to send a Zelle payment to someone new, we'll ask you a couple times. Are you sure you want to send this money? Are you sure who you're sending it to? Is this person really the right person they say they are? Understanding all that is critical. And part of this also is an investment by ourselves in the industry around digital identity, which I think is going to be really key, is understanding how do we know in context who you are? And that's going to be like the next frontier, I think, in payments is actually digital identity.
Very interesting. And thank you so much for sharing broader perspectives on the rationale behind some of these hypotheses that you've put together for 2024. It'll be interesting to stay in touch and to see how things continue to develop relative to each of those. Any other trends that particularly excite you or that you have your eyes open to as you think across the year ahead or the foreseeable future, Aether?
Well, I think the other trend that we're keeping a close eye on is generational wealth transfer. And so what I mean by that is there's somewhere, depending on the time frame you want to benchmark, somewhere around $80 trillion that's going to move from the baby boomer generation to millennials and Gen Z. And when you think about that, the other trend that sort of intersects that is the demographic shifts that are happening in the U.S. And I say that because, so think about why we launched Fargo in Spanish. Well, people who are native Spanish speakers make up 20% of the U.S. And their wealth is growing at a rate three times the rest of everyone else. And so it's a critical customer base to be able to serve them. So when I think about how money is changing between generations and then the demographic shift across, it starts to get you to rethink how you provide service, who provides service, and then the fundamental delivery mechanisms. Because if you think about your financial advisors don't necessarily look like all of your customers. It's a very different demographic. Most financial advisors are on the older spectrum. They're usually not of a very diverse background. It's just that's just the nature of the industry across all institutions. And so how do we meet people where they are and really understand the cultural dynamics that play into wealth? Also, there's just like differences. I've got kids in their 20s. They're not going to bank like my parents did or they're invest like my parents did. So how do you get everything into the mobile app is the other thing. So why we're doubling down on digital is because that next generation who grew up, everything's real time, everything's on demand, everything's digital. They're born with a smartphone in their hand. That's kind of critical to that future. And so how do we think about that? So those two trends, both the demographic shift in the US and that wealth transfer are making us really rethink about who our customer of the next 5 years or 10 years is going to be versus who it has been for the last 50.
Very interesting perspective as well. Thank you for sharing that, Aether. I wanted to also ask you, as somebody who's had important roles across multiple institutions of late in your career in financial institutions, prior to your consequential role that we've been covering here at Wells Fargo, you were at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, culminating your time there as the president of business banking. You know, as you think about your career and the heights you've reached, what have been some of the difference makers along the way for you, Aether, perhaps tuned for people who are a few rungs down the ladder from you, but have aspirations to walk in your footsteps?
Well, I really appreciate that question, Peter. So I'd say a couple of things. One is, in everything I do, there's a definite like being very data driven and being very customer focused. So, you know, we have a thing in my team, which I call the way forward. And so the first principle is being data-driven and customer-obsessed. And so gut feel is important and your gut gets better and honed over time, but it's honed over experiences and the experiences are actually data. And so when we look at anything, so what we're going to build in the mobile app, which product we're going to roll out in treasury, it's all based on the data of what our customers need and want to do. And so that's sort of the fact-based is sort of point number one. Point number two is about curiosity. Of personal curiosity and what I demand out of my team. So, you know, I'm notorious in my telling my team, I get up very early in the morning. I read a couple periodicals in the morning before I work out, come to work. I read periodicals at night. I'm reading on the weekends. I'm always reading, trying to learn and absorb because the learning never stops. It didn't stop when I graduated from college, didn't stop when I graduated from graduate school. It doesn't stop every day on the job. There's always more you can learn. So that curiosity sort of fuels me. And then when I hire people in my teams, I'm hiring people who have that same curiosity and desire, and they're never kind of satisfied with the things as they are today. And then people who can inspire others to act. Because ultimately, as you get more senior, you know, I've got a very large organization, but I can't do it. I have to inspire other people to do the work. And so I need to give them a vision and give them the energy and clear obstacles out of the way so they can move forward. So I think getting, you know, being curious, being data focused and customer obsessed, and then really focusing on who you hire on your team to make you better. I also try to hire people candidly better at their jobs than I am. That's not my superpower is not being the best at everything. You know, I like to think of myself as I was a point guard, but I kept growing up. So getting the ball in the best player's hands at the right moment is kind of what I do best. And so I think that's been how I think about how I can get more leverage out of myself is by focusing on those things.
Fantastic reflections and really great advice. Customer obsessed, being fact-based and data-driven, being curious, and hiring people who are better than you to surround yourself with those people. I think it's a great advice all. And great, as always, Aether, to learn from you, to hear about the things that you and your team are focused on. I appreciate your willingness to spend a little more time with me and to share about the things that you and your team are focused on, as well as your outlook for the year ahead.
Aether, thank you very much. Great to see you.